Few highlights regarding the two-week extension of the executive order that I mentioned on Friday that was coming, that Hunker Down Hoosiers two-week extension. First, let me just say that we've clearly listed in this executive order, this edition of it, all of the essential manufacturing operations doing business are done so with the health and the safety of every employee in mind. I want to thank everyone that's been doing that already to date, but we want to make sure all of those measures, working 6 feet apart from one another, making sure you're washing hands on a regular basis, making sure that there's hand sanitizer, et cetera, that all of that is available for every employee. All of that information can be found on the executive order, as I mentioned. Secondly, all retail businesses that are open outside of the list of businesses such as pharmacies and grocery stores and gas stations and convenience stores, all of those outside of that in regards to foot traffic will now operate just like our bars and our restaurants are doing. That's carry out, curbside, online delivery, potentially an appointment in a very rare circumstance. So there's no foot traffic inside of the facility going forward for all retail businesses. Third, all of our campgrounds, and that includes our state park campgrounds, are closed. We had those opened with good intentions in mind, but it was never meant, it was meant for our state park campgrounds, et cetera, for exercising. And we can't have parking lots full of hundreds of folks taking in our beautiful state park. So they are now closed. That rare exception for a campground would be is if that is your primary residence. But those wouldn't be at a state park. And then let me just say fourth and finally before I kick it over to Dr. Box for her updates. Judge David Cook at the ATC will be overseeing all of our executive order enforcement efforts. This goes statewide, making sure all of these directives inside this new edition of the executive order are followed and complied with. He'll be overseeing personnel, law enforcement personnel at ATC, at excise, at gaming, our conservation officers. They'll be spread out statewide, making sure that we're all orienting in the same direction, moving in the same direction, and going through this journey together. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Box, our health commissioner. She's going to give us some, you've got a lot of updates and a lot of information to go over. But if you would please, in addition to whatever else you want to touch on, testing, our capacity, our PPE inventory and status, and then anything else you want to add.
Absolutely. Thank you, Governor. I do have a lot of updates today with some slides, so I do want to get started with that. And I am going to update you on testing in the state of Indiana as it stands now and future testing. We're going to talk a little bit about personal protective equipment, talk about ventilators and ICU beds as we go through all these slides today. In just over a month, our testing for COVID-19 in the state of Indiana has expanded with our addition of not only the State Department of Health Lab, but Eli Lilly, IU Health, LabCorp, and Quest testing. As all of these labs have come on board, we have been able to significantly increase our testing. On April 5th, Indiana had the highest number of tests in one day. That was 3,548. The day before that, it had been 2,860. This is just a little bit below what we deem our maximum capacity to be right now, which is 3,700 tests per day. This has allowed us to expand our testing criteria, which I mentioned last week, in that we are including also our symptomatic pregnant patients. They've always been included in the testing, but are really underlining and underscoring the need to test any symptomatic pregnant patient because of their immune compromise. We also have included individuals that have high BMIs, meaning that their weight compared to their height is very high, and individuals that have underlying health concerns that are seen by clinicians if they're suspected to have COVID-19 should be tested. Since we have more capacity for testing at this time, we really are looking to our providers that are seeing patients in the hospital, in the emergency room, or admitting to make sure that they are testing for COVID-19 in especially these high-risk populations. By adding labs like MACL, Alverno, Deaconess, Quantigen, and potentially at Purdue, our hope is to be able to process more than 6,300 tests a day across the state in just the coming weeks. Although testing swabs and media remain a concern, I believe that we can reach these levels and are considering alternate ways of actually obtaining these swabs. We're also working to increase testing in northern and southern Indiana parts of our state, specifically for our first responders, our healthcare providers, our long-term care workers, et cetera, as we have been able to do here in central Indiana. More about that later this week. We've also had some questions about how Indiana's testing numbers compare to those surrounding states, and this slide shows you how Indiana's testing compares to testing being done in the state of Illinois, Ohio, and Michigan. Illinois and Michigan, as you can see, are testing about 460 individuals per 100,000 of their population. Ohio and Kentucky are testing about 373 per 100,000, and Indiana is testing 336 per 100,000. I also want to update you on the status of personal protective equipment here in Indiana. When we began planning for this pandemic, we calculated how many masks we would need if we could use our PPE to its absolute best, if we could protect everybody in the 100% fashion that we would like to do, not at the time of a pandemic, versus if we conserved as strictly as possible how we would be able to conserve our PPE. The best case scenario when we are using very strict conservation means that we would use about 50,000 masks a day, and that's with conserving. What we have received from the Strategic National Stockpile conservatively would cover about 13 days if the state of Indiana received no further supplies. That means that our hospitals were not receiving their normal supplies, which they are. They have noticed some slowing in receiving their supplies and some decreased amounts, especially more of our independent hospitals, but they are continuing to get PPE from their providers and their suppliers. We have currently distributed more than 80% of what we received to hospitals and our local health departments. We have very limited supplies remaining for emergencies, and we will prioritize our hospital, our EMS, and our long-term care facilities with this. That's why it's more important than ever that you, if you have PPE, please donate it to your hospital, your long-term care facility, or to your EMS. If your business has the ability to make these products, then fire up your lines because we're ready for it. And if you're not conserving the PPE that you have, the time to start was actually several weeks ago, but definitely start it now. As I've said before, the Strategic National Stockpile was never meant to actually be able to help every state in the United States with all of their PPE needs throughout the pandemic. Likewise, state health departments were never built to supply all the PPE needed in every hospital, every local health department, every EMS, every long-term care facility. We're not sure if we'll be receiving any additional supplies from the National Strategic Stockpile at this time. We are continuing to make requests through FEMA and will work to buy personal protective equipment anywhere that we can. But until I have the supplies actually in my hand, I cannot promise that we can replenish anyone's PPE. As a healthcare provider, that is incredibly hard for me to say. And I know that as a healthcare provider and a first responder, that's even harder to hear. But that's the reality that every state across the United States is facing at this time. This is just another reason for why we need every Hoosier to hunker down. We can't have you sick and in our hospitals and being carried in our ambulances or taking it into our long-term care facilities. Additionally, I want to update you about the number of ICU beds and ventilators and the work that we've done to increase the capacity for both across the state. As you saw today, the number of known cases has now topped 4,944 in our state, and 139 Hoosiers have lost their lives to this disease. We also know that nearly 1,000 people across the state are currently hospitalized with COVID-like illness. When we discussed the need for ventilators and ICU beds previously, we provided you some baseline numbers. With regards to ventilators, as of March 1st, our baseline showed 1,177 ventilators across the state in our hospitals for use. By March 30th, we had increased that to 1,927. As of today, we have 2,642 vents that are available and actually in our hospital systems to be used, with another 455 that have been identified for potential use if needed, for a total of 3,097 ventilators. Another way to show you the ventilator capacity is on this slide, and also it shows you the usage of ICU beds here in the state of Indiana. As of April 5th, 27% of the vents in our hospitals are in use, with 17% being used by COVID patients. With regards to ICU beds, as of March 1st, we had a baseline of 1,132 ICU beds in the state of Indiana. As of April 1st, that number had increased to 2,188 because our hospitals had done such an incredible job of converting every possible room into an ICU room. And by April 4th, that had jumped to 2,964, as you see on this slide. About 58% of those ICU beds across the state are currently occupied, and that about 60% occupancy rate has maintained very stable over the last week. Of those 58% of ICU beds that are occupied, 31% of those are occupied by COVID-19 patients. And lastly, today I have the unenviable task of informing you of a very serious outbreak of COVID-19 at one of our long-term care facilities. You asked me, and I said from day one, what was my biggest fear as a state health officer? And that was that we would have an outbreak in a nursing home, like the one we witnessed in the state of Washington. Unfortunately, just like the state of Washington and Maryland, we here in Indiana have had a significant outbreak in a nursing home that has taken to date the lives of 11 residents related to COVID-19. This outbreak is occurring at Bethany Point facility in Madison County. The State Department of Health has been working with them since March the 26th when they first requested our strike team to engage. On March the 27th, our strike team and a nurse surveyor visited the facility and tested symptomatic individuals. At that time, we confirmed 3 positive residents. We have had multiple discussions on that date and several after, and have been in the facility multiple times to discuss infection control, isolation, and to do further testing. Unfortunately, this situation quickly escalated. When we visited on Friday, we were informed that 20 residents were in isolation and that 9 individuals had died. Sadly, 2 more residents have died since then, for a total of 11 deaths. And unfortunately, 3 employees are hospitalized, 2 of which are critically ill. Our team is facilitating the transfer of asymptomatic residents from this part of the facility to another skilled nursing facility. Prior to that, on Sunday, we tested all residents in this particular part of this nursing home that the outbreak occurred, to make sure that even individuals that are asymptomatic, that we're testing them, if they're positive, they will remain quarantined in the facility and not go to another facility. This is a heartbreaking situation and illustrates what a brutal toll that COVID-19 can take on our most vulnerable populations. Unfortunately, this will not be the last outbreak of this kind. If you're a long-term care facility, please be sure that you are following the infection controls guidance. Please make sure that you're not letting your residents get together for meals or for gatherings. Please make sure that you're wearing a mask, that anyone that comes in contact with them or is making their food or cleaning their rooms or passing their meds wears a mask and washes their hands carefully. If you have ill employees or residents, take immediate steps to isolate them and reach out immediately to the State Department of Health. We will come out and we will test all of your symptomatic individuals. We will test other individuals that are in and near and live close to them in the residential facility. We will test any employee that appears ill. And we will make sure that you're following the appropriate infection control procedures and isolating these individuals. I can't emphasize enough that we're here to help you. It doesn't matter if we were there just yesterday, we will come again today. If the situation changes, we will come again and again and again to help you, because we know that you want to protect this population and we want to help you to do that. These are our grandparents and our parents. These are our friends, our neighbors, our church relatives. They're individuals that we care about and that we want to protect. So please help us to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Box. Fred, we'll turn to you now, the commissioner of the Department of Workforce Development. You were asked a number of questions on Friday, and you were awaiting guidance. You want to share any updates that you have 48 hours later?
Sure. So today I'll talk a little bit about the CARES Act and our engagement with the U.S. Department of Labor. There are two specific provisions of the CARE Act that I want to talk about today. So I'm going to use some acronyms, but I'm going to talk about them separately. First, the Pandemic Unemployment Compensation portion of the CARES Act, or PUC. The PUC provides an additional $600 in weekly benefits to those who are eligible to receive regular unemployment benefits under state law. Over the weekend, the United States Department of Labor provided us guidance on how to proceed with paying these benefits. We've been working to quickly revise our systems so that these additional benefits may be sent electronically in the same manner as a claimant's current unemployment benefits are paid. The $600 benefit under PUC is effective as of March 29, 2020. And payable for any week of unemployment through July 31st, 2020. All benefits will be paid retroactively to March 29th. The day the CARES Act was signed into law, our team here in Indiana worked to ensure that we signed all agreements to make sure that Indiana was at the front of the line when this act became effective, which was March 29th. And because we did that, that's why the payments are now retroactive and we're able to take advantage of the entire length of time that this benefit is available. Now on to PUA, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance portion of the CARES Act. This portion of the act creates temporary unemployment insurance, a program that's for individuals who do not otherwise normally qualify for unemployment insurance benefits, but who would be working but for COVID-19. This group includes those who are self-employed, independent contractors, gig economy workers, or those who have a limited work history. In addition to now being eligible for unemployment benefits, this class of workers will also be eligible for the $600 weekly benefit. The U.S. Department of Labor also provided guidance on this as well, and we're working to modify our current systems and create entirely new systems to cover this new class of eligible workers. There's a huge difference between modifying our current unemployment system or process to include the $600 federal benefit for those already eligible and creating an entirely new system for a totally new class of covered workers. Although we had already started working on creating and updating our unemployment processing system in anticipation of these guidelines, just like all other states, this new system, by and large, must be built. Multiple agencies will need to be involved, as we must have a way to systematically confirm earnings in a manner that our current system does not.